Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Coach Melusi.
Greetings, my brother, and how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And how are you doing?
I am blessed, man. I know I'm more blessed than you.
Oh, tell me about it.
You looked for me, man, and you found me.
Yes, indeed.
Greetings to you and our listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much, man, for making time to talk to us this afternoon. Now, we're talking about the power of a leader's words. And if you're a leader out there, whether you're leading in the church, you're leading in your organization, in the NGO, wherever that you are leading, imagine you're halfway through a busy day and a single email from somebody else up higher, maybe your boss, pops up. It's only five words long, but it's suddenly your heart is racing and you're questioning everything you did this week. The truth is, words are the most powerful tool a leader has, and they can be used to build a culture of trust or tear it down in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's a high stakes speech in the boardroom or a quick message on the go, every syllable carries weight. But how do we bridge a gap between what we meant to say and what our team actually hears? Now, coach, tell me, in James 3 verse 2, it suggests that if someone can control their tongue, they are perfect, it says, or it says they are spiritually mature. Now, the question is, why is speech the ultimate stress test for a leader's character?
Because speech is what God uses to create the universe. So God spoke the universe into existence. That's how much powerful speech is. And he entrusted us with that ability, which is a God and divine ability. When God speaks, things don't remain the same. And so speech is a godly likeness tool that we have in our hands. And we were not given it to curse people, but to bless. And so whether we are speaking the words, as James mentioned it, or we are now typing it and transmitting them in an email or in a message, they are still powerful because they trigger thoughts, they trigger feelings, and they inform behavior. So what our listeners need to understand is that if you are in a leadership position, you want to be very careful what you say, but you need to be even more careful what you write, because when people read your words, they are not hearing the tone. They are not seeing your verbal, your non-verbal and verbal facial features. They are just seeing words. And words can create a world, a good and a bad one. And so you need to be very sure that before you put it in writing, you have said it somewhere. So that when you then write it, they remember how you said it.
They remembered how you said it. Very, very profound that. Now, Christ thought, he taught rather that the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. This is Matthew 12:34. How can a leader use their own slip-ups in speech as a diagnostic tool for their spiritual health?
In fact, what you say is a sum total of how you feel. If you go to Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, it says, whatever things are noble, whatever things are good, whatever things are honest, whatever things are of good report, it lists about seven of the areas that it then says at the end, think about this. It doesn't say speak about this. It says think about this. So for words to be created, the leader needs to know that the production of speech is not a haphazard thing. Speech is based on thoughts. And these thoughts are generated in our prefrontal cortex, which is our thinking hub, where we create intentions, we create the idea of saying, I want to speak, we create the ideas themselves, and we choose what we want to say. And before it even comes out in the mouth, the prefrontal cortex throws it to the Broca part of the brain, which is the speech planning center. This is where they write your speech, where they correct your grammar, they choose the words, and they plan the sequence of those words and where to emphasize, which is what the next center does, the motor cortex, which is the speech execution center. So the motor cortex then says, how is the tongue going to roll? How are the lips going to look like? How is the jaw going to look like? Is it going to be tight? Is it going to be smiling? What is the vocal cord and the pitch and the diaphragm you're going to use? That's the motor cortex, which is the third part of the brain. Then it goes to the basal ganglia, which is another part of the brain where now they coordinate and smoothen that speech and make sure there's rhythm and there's fluency. And if that part is damaged, you will hear the leader stammering. And you know, there's no clarity of that speech because that part of the brain is not engaging. Then finally, there's a cerebrum part of the brain which then controls your speech precision to choose the right words in the billions of pictures that are flashing through our heads. Which one must I say? So what am I saying to you, Azama and our listeners? When a leader slips the tongue, there is so much neurological and biopsychological processes that happened before that slip up happened. So it's never just a slip up. It's a clear index of the heart. Now, just to emphasize that point briefly, why do you think God said in Matthew chapter 12, by your words you shall be condemned, and by your words you shall be justified? It's because words truly represent who we are internally. And so a leader must never underestimate a slip of the tongue. It reflects how they are thinking, how they are feeling, and how they are organizing their understanding of their environment. And therefore, don't take slip-ups on the speech lightly. Rome burnt down because of a leader's slip up in the tongue, just saying it's the Christians who are causing this disruption. And lives were lost. In Rwanda, someone just called someone a cockroach and a murderous genocide followed that statement. And so how we pitch our words and what we say about words is very important. So when a leader mentions something, people understand them in a thousand ways. And so it is important for a leader to be very clear and concise on what we say. And leaders cannot afford to be reckless with words. They cannot afford that because lives are on stake because of what they say.
Yeah. Now, we often hear about radical candor. Where is the line between providing necessary, tough feedback and accidentally tearing down a team member's confidence?
You see, the difference is in intention and the delivery of that speech. Correction must always preserve dignity. I don't think any leader has a right to take away anyone's dignity. Yep. It doesn't matter. They are guilty. They've messed up. They still deserve respect. Jesus said to the woman caught red-handed, whoever has no sin, throw the first stone. That was a tough one. So he switched the focus from the guilty one to the accusers so that he balances the space. Later on, he then said to the woman, where are your accusers? She says, none, Lord, I don't see any. And he said, I do not accuse you either. Go and sin no more. So what am I saying? The goal is not to release frustration because someone has messed up. The goal of a leader is to always develop people.
Yes.
So before speaking, leaders must ask themselves, am I correcting and helping someone to grow, or am I reacting with my frustrations? So great leaders correct behavior,
yes,
without attacking the identity of the person. So Jesus says, go and sin no more. He doesn't attack this woman for what she did. He addresses the behavior. He addresses the identity of the woman. So great leaders say, they don't say you messed up. They say this action needs improvement.
They remove it from you.
Yes, this thing needs to be improved. And so they don't say, when Azama, you are the problem here. You are the reason we are failing. No, they don't do that. So leaders, yes, can be firm on standards, but they must be gentle on people. I wanna rest it right there to say there's no room for us to attack and slaughter the person. Address the challenge and help the person to do better next time. They must walk away from your place saying, phew, I messed up. I thought I was going to be killed, but I've been given a second chance. I cannot let this leader down.
Yeah, very, very powerful. It's actually it's empowering. Very, very empowering. Now, without facial expressions or vocal tone, digital messages are often misread as harsher than intended. And you said something earlier about this particular thing. Advising, you know, perhaps some point of emphasis there. How can a leader then ensure a short, direct message is not misread as anger or disappointment?
Yeah, the written text is not the best way to communicate sensitive issues. I think that's the rule of thumb. I have a principle that says, come touch my blood first. I want to hear the vibration of your hand, whether you are shaking or whether you are firm and your grip is good. Come talk to me face to face. So digital communication is not the best to communicate emotional things. All right? It's not the best. And unfortunately, that's what we are seeing happening nowadays. People are so reckless. They want to be the first to break the news, and they want to be timely. They want to be viral. They want to be, and they are killing people in the process. So wise leaders, they make sure that if they don't have the opportunity to speak to their people, they will always put it in a very clear way, in simple words, and in a very warm and welcoming tone. So they will give you the hardest news in a very friendly way. So the simple additions that they make in that speech is what makes the difference. They season it with friendliness and warmliness and calmliness and humility. Sometimes they may need to get someone to read it. Just read the message before you send it. Get someone who's neutral, who has not heard your thoughts, to read it and give you feedback before you send it out. Because once it's out, unfortunately, the damage is done. People will interpret it the way they want, the way they hear it. They will critique you. They will slaughter you for what you never said. And so it is important to think before you do, to appreciate the situation and get people face to face if it's possible before you can put it in writing. Because when you clarify the message in your speech before you write it, or in your consultation before you send it, you are preventing assumptions to be made against you. You are making sure that you don't remain silent, but you address the situation without creating confusion. So leaders have to be intentional in how they communicate, and they must develop emotional intelligence, because your words are not just academic. They are not just technical. They are not just straight to the point, but they must also address the emotion, because remember, people think, people feel, and people behave. And behavior is a product of how people feel and how they think. So you've got to address all of that before you send your email, which does not show your emotion. If you are good in words, then include as much of your emotional description there, and warmliness. Don't be too harsh in an email. You are better off harsh in your words, in speech, than in email, because an email, you never know where it's going to be read. Some of these emails are cut, the screens are cut out and sent to wives of people.
Yo.
You know? And your emotions are not going to be there to defend you. You'll be slaughtered there, and you'll be seen to be this mean person when you are not a mean person. So it's important for leaders to speak through their words. That's why even God, Zama, he didn't send an email to Adam and Eve. He came in the cool of the garden and said, Adam, where are you?
Yeah.
He addressed it by talking face to face.
Now, before I leave you, and we're going to be going to our devotion in 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Is there power in a leader saying the words, I don't know, or I made a mistake?
Mm.
Or does that weaken their authority in the eyes of the team?
Well, the verdict is still out on that one. And I'm saying it's out because it depends on which sector of leadership you are in. All right. If you say, I don't know, at Harvard, top scientists who are determining the lives of people, you might find your CV by the door. Because they hire you to think and to know. You must come with solutions. So if you are in the life sciences, in the surgical unit, you cannot slice if you don't know. You need to know. You cannot instruct if you don't know. You've got to be approved and be the one who carries the right to say the things you're saying. So you can't say, I don't know. Otherwise, everything crumbles at that. And people will do whatever they want. So if you are in the knowledge, leadership, scientific spaces, you need to know your ducks. You must stay in line. And if you don't know, there is always space for you to consult with others. To say I made a mistake says a lot about your leadership style. Whether you are an authoritarian, you are autocratic, you don't consult, because the Bible says in many councils there is wisdom. So if you don't have people who are advising you and counseling you around you, whether you're in the religious sector, the political, the economic, environmental, medical, you name it, or social sciences, then it means you are setting yourself up for failure. A leader must have a council that he reverts to consult before he makes a critical decision. And if you don't have that, you're then prone to make mistakes. And once you make mistakes, mistakes are very brutal at a leadership point. They can actually cost you your career. There are many people we know whose careers came to a shattering stop because of indiscretion in certain areas. So this is one of the most critical pinnacle statements that could go either way. So I say the verdict is out, because even in church, pastors are not expected to make mistakes. They should know better. That's the statement. And that is used to kick them out. And there's no second chance. Your license is withdrawn. There can never be a second chance. And yet, in an environment where people are committed to growth, that statement does not weaken your authority. If you are in an environment of learning and growing, that's why even Jesus asked his disciples, what do people think I am? Who do people say I am? He really wanted to know if the disciples are in tune with what is being said about him. So when you say, I don't know, or I made a mistake, you might be putting yourself in a very vulnerable position that can actually fortuitously increase the trust that people have on you, because people trust leaders who are authentic, who don't posture that they are the strong man and they never break. When people come face to face with the humanity of a leader, it really humbles them and it makes them endeared to that leader. So humility actually creates what we call psychological safety. People feel safe around you to say, you know, he's human. He understands. He knows that we can make mistakes, and he knows he's human as well. So on one side of the spectrum, when a leader admits to his mistakes, they give permission to others to grow with him. But on the other extreme spectrum of dog-eat-dog competition, making a mistake can be very costly.
Yeah.
And so as Christians, we say humility is what creates loyalty. So don't be a tyrant. Rule with humility. Even Jesus himself, when he was at the point of death, he said to his disciples, "My spirit is sorrowful even unto death." So that's what a human leader should do. You must feel, he must think, and he must behave as someone who has emotions and who has feelings and who has thoughts that can trouble them.
Yeah. Man, Coach, I must thank you so much for coming through. It's truly been a fantastic, fantastic one. Thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been a lovely one. Have a fantastic evening ahead.
Thank you so much, and it's a blessing to have you with me today. And greetings to your viewers, and all the best for the evening.
Thank you so much.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.